Mental Health Monday with Mick Coyle.
Radio City Talk.
I'm very pleased to say Mental Health Monday returns for another week, and we've got loads of great guests lined up for this week as well. Now, radio listeners are about to listen to our interview with Liam Kennedy, who's joining us in the studio. We'll meet Liam in a couple of moments as well. Also, an interview with Omid Jalili, the comedian, who I didn't realise before I spoke to him that he's actually got family from Liverpool. You'll have seen him in films and TV and all kinds of different things. It's Men's Health Week this week, and he's been looking through the results of a new survey, which talk about men from certain ages, at what point we feel good about ourselves, at what point we let it slip, and at what point we try and get it back. Omid's at the point now where he's trying to get it back. Full story and full explanation on the way. You can check it out as part of Mental Health Monday and the podcast, which is free and available to download. We do it every Monday right here on Radio City Talk. My name's Mick Coyle, and like I say, my guest in the studio is a mental health warrior. And his name is Liam Kennedy. Liam, thank you for your time. Great to see you.
Thanks for having me.
It's a pleasure to get you on. You have, you've described yourself as a mental health sufferer, but currently in recovery.
Yeah.
With that recovery has opened many different doors to you. Yeah. We've got some poetry we're going to be talking about as well, a poetry night, and now publishers and people like that are sniffing around you because your story has gone off in, as I say, many different directions. Can we start off, when you talk about being a mental health sufferer, how are you suffering?
I've got a lot of different conditions. I've got PTSD, mixed anxiety, psychosis, depression, and I hear voices. And if I could just go back to the how it started, is that okay?
Absolutely.
Yeah. So I'm 30 years of age. I've been a mental health sufferer since the age of 20. When I had my first job at 19, I was working in a sports college looking after a group of disabled adults, and I was earning quite a bit of money. You know, it was great as a 19-year-old. I was playing football semi-professionally. Everything was just going great. And then after, I'd say about 10 or 11 months, one of the people who I looked after, he suffered with epilepsy, and he ended up getting a kick to the head with a football, and he had a major fit. So we made sure he was okay. He went home, and over the weekend he died. So that I'd never experienced anything like that before. And because I was quite close to the lad, it hit me hard. And it started affecting my performance and work. I just thought I was tired. I just thought, what's going on? Why am I so tired? I'm a young lad. But I was depressed. Ended up staying off work, being prescribed tablets. And then after a while, it just got to the point where I thought, I can't go back. So we ended up being finished, I just resigned, and then it was like seeing doctors and stuff, you know, being diagnosed. I'd heard about mental health, but I didn't know, I was uneducated, and then all of a sudden it's like, wow, this is happening to me now. So I had to see the crisis team. They were coming out 3 times a week, and things were sort of getting, the tablet stabilised me, but I was still in shock, you know, just like it was all brand new, and it was scary. It was a scary time. But my family, I was lucky. I had my family are quite close, and my partner Lisa, you know, she was going through a tough time with it as well, as hard as I was going through it. And you know, after a certain period of time, I ended up getting introduced to Everton in the community, and it was a program called Imagine Your Goals, which is for a group of lads just playing football. So I went there. The first day was like, I was scared, but I was intrigued. And I went, and it was just lads playing football. No one was talking about anything, and it was great. And I hadn't kicked the ball for about 3 years, so playing football again was, it reignited something inside of me. So being involved with that and then playing competitive football again, I was sort of coming back on the up. So fast forward about another year, and I fell into a really bad, deep depression, and I ended up having a breakdown, which lasted 10 weeks, but there was a lot of circumstances going on. I was severely depressed. I was hearing 8 different voices. I was averaging 2 hours of broken sleep a night, and after the first week of the breakdown, my doctors took me off all my medication and never replaced it with anything. So for the remaining 9 weeks, I went through horrendous withdrawal symptoms, and it was my Everest. It was my Mount Everest. I was tested. It actually come to the, I come to the conclusion I thought I had cancer because I was that sick. I was vomiting every day. My family were you know, rallied around me. My partner was going, Lisa was going through a lot of, you know, she was upset, she was worried about me. And as the, each week felt like, it felt like a year, honestly. It was just, because I was hardly sleeping, I was just going, I was losing my mind. I was reclused in my bedroom. And I just, it was just, it was torture. This was my personal hell. And after like 6-7 weeks, I started coming to the conclusion, like, I'm not going to come out of this. And it was just like a matter of time until I quit. But something was just still going inside of me. Something was still, the 1% of the real Liam was still fighting away. And it got to week 9. And what I sort of changed the situation. I started envisioning what being happy was like again. I started creating scenarios in my head, being out with my partner, having like nice times with my family, playing football. So I started creating this. And what I didn't realise, but I was planting seeds. So we got to week 10 and I was the worst condition I've ever been in. I'd lost so much weight. I was hardly eating. I'd, like I said, 2 hours of broken sleep a night. And I knew on this day, it wasn't just the last day of the breakdown, it was the first day of the rest of my life, first day of my recovery. And I was given two options. It was, Liam, you stay in bed and quit and succumb to this, or no, you take the covers off you, get out of that bed and you start fighting back. And I chose the hard option. And I'm still here, I'm fighting, and I'm in recovery. And it's the, although it was the hardest decision I've ever made, it was the best decision I've ever made, because it's made me. That 10-week breakdown was the catalyst behind to the man what I've become today.
What a time you've had. I mean, that is a difficult time on top of a difficult time on top of a difficult time. I mean, that is, you know, that experience that you've gone through there, the lowest of the lows.
Yeah.
And then finding that, you know, and then something else on top, then something else on top. You mentioned that 10-week time and the point where you thought, the easier option is to quit.
Yeah,
but I can see something. Was it as small as that 1%? There was a little glimmer of light, a little moment where you thought, okay, there's a chance.
There was like you just said, there a glimmer of light. There was just something that was not allowing me to quit, and I like to believe that it was me inner strength, because I was looking for it for that 10 weeks until I finally found it. I was looking for it. I was searching for it. Couldn't find it. And, you know, thank God that I did. It was so hard. I was weak. I was sleep deprived. I hadn't been on medication for 9 weeks, so I was going through withdrawal symptoms. But I found the courage to lift the covers off me and get out of the bed. And it was like, you know, have you seen Shawshank Redemption?
Yeah.
It was like when he climbs out of the sewer and the rain's on him and he's like this. That's what it was like. It was like that moment. That's the best way I can describe it. I was free.
In terms of the original trauma that when you're in the job, which it seemed that you really enjoyed doing, but there's that terrible incident as well. When you've spoken to the various professionals that you come up against, have they often brought it back to that moment? Have you sort of worked out in your own mind whether or not that was a trigger moment within your own head, that was the reason that there was a trauma there, an event which you weren't expecting that hit you much harder before you were really, you know, prepared to deal with it?
I mean, I just put it down to the fact that I'd never experienced it before. And because I was so close, I'm quite an emotional man. You know, I care about people. And because I was so close to the individual, it hit me hard. You know, like I said, for the first 3 or 4 weeks, I thought I was tired. I just thought I was exhausted from work. But I was a young, fit lad. And, I ended up being depression and then being prescribed meds.
When you were going through all that and obviously semi-professional football, you know, active and things like that. When you'd stop doing that, people often say, you know, when you stop moving around, the brain stops receiving certain signals as well. Do you think that was part of the thing, that you'd been active, you'd been lively, you'd been out and about, you'd been all here, there and everywhere. You had that sort of competitive element and then that was taken away from you. Do you think that was part of the problem that added to the
Definitely, yeah. It was stolen from me, and it was as if I wasn't in control of, you know, I wanted to play football again and I wanted to be active, but my illness was calling the shots at the time. And it was, I did miss it. I did, like, but like I said, when I years later, when I got back in when I got involved with Everton, the community, it reignited that again, that old Liam, that competitive Liam, you know.
I think it's a really key point you make here, Liam. I've got Liam Kennedy with us, by the way, on the Mental Health Monday. Liam, you talk about the real you was in there. And I speak to many people on this program who actually, when they go through that, what they do is they almost get to the point where they have to accept the sense that this person who exists now must be the real Liam. Oh, this must be the real Liam, the one who can't get out of bed, the one who wants to give up, this one who wants to, you know, quit life.
Yeah.
But actually, a real sense there that the real you, the you that you wanted to be, was in there.
Yeah.
And actually, this other imposter, the 99%, was actually standing in the way of you being yourself.
He was holding me back. He really was. He was horrible. He was negative. But the real Liam was still there. And he had to be brave. He had to stand up and fight that much stronger element. And, you know, it didn't happen overnight. The most crucial point was actually not quitting. Actually saying, you know what, I'm going to fight now. This is going to be the making of me. And I did. And then obviously, as the weeks got on, I started lifting weights again. I started playing football. My meds were given back to me. The voices diminished. You know, they went down from 8 to about 2. I know people will think, God, you're still hearing 2 voices, but it's better than hearing 8. That's the way I've seen it.
With that in mind, you mentioned that kind of the support network that came around you, the Imagine Your Goals program as well, something we've talked about with Colin Dolan actually on, I think, on the podcast previously.
And old Colin.
Great setup there at Everton in the community as well. With that in mind, and your partner, of course, as well, were you open to having those conversations, sort of, not publicly, but with other individuals, or was there a sense of you which was still keeping something back, something which was still internalising what you were going through?
When I first got involved with the programme, I wasn't really open to... I just wanted to play football. And there was, you didn't have to talk about your feelings, you know, it was just a... you know, you just come and play football, that's all it was. But after like, especially after the breakdown, and then when I come out of it, that's when I started to talk about me condition and me story. And then that's when poetry started happening. I started writing poems. I've never wrote in my life, never done it. But it was just like, it was like I go into a trance when I'm writing one, and then I come out of it and I'm like, wow, have I just wrote that? And then it just went on from there. I was involved with Everton Community's newsletter where I'd post a few, submit a few poems. And then it's when I started getting really involved with social media, joining poetry groups. I had my own poetry page and I was helping people. For me, it's not enough that I've got myself back on track. It's not enough. It's only 50% of the work. The other 50% is going out there and helping others now. I want to prevent happening to someone what's happened to me. I don't want them to go what I've gone through, because I know it's horrible.
What sort of feedback do you get? Obviously, don't mention, you know, any names. What sort of things do people say to you, Liam, about themselves? Because people will see you, for people who don't know, you're a big bloke. You know, you look like you work out. Yeah. You know, you got a better beard than I could ever grow, frankly. You know, mental health warrior by name and nature as well. You know, But people wouldn't look at you and think former semi-pro footballer now writing poetry. People wouldn't be thinking that. So what do they say to you? Because actually you're the sort of person, I think, who can connect with so many people, because you don't look like somebody who's going to come and, you know, be a motivational speaker. No. You don't look like somebody who is going to come on and say, be like me, but you're somebody who can be real, who can give something of themselves and have a real experience, lived experience that you can share.
I get feedback daily on Facebook, Instagram and Twitter, and it's people... I don't do it for praise. I don't do it for people to go... Hang on, sorry. For people to go, oh, you're great, Liam. It's not about that. Someone will get in touch with me and say, Liam, I was having a really bad day today, but I read that poem and it's given me the strength to get through the rest of the day. And it's special, that. And my proudest moment through feedback was, it's quite sad as well. A gentleman got in touch with me on Facebook and he said that his wife had died of cancer, but she was a fan of my poetry. And during their final moments, she took strength from my poems. So when he told me that, I got emotional. And he asked for permission if he could read one of my poems out at a funeral. And I was like, wow, I was blown away. I was like, wow, this is what I was meant to do. I just believed that this is my destiny. I've been tested with mental health problems. I was meant to come out of it the other side come back a much stronger man, every aspect of my life, and now I'm meant to help others, now my peers. And you know what? It's not a chore. It's a pleasure. It's an honour, and it's my duty. That's always how I see it.
We've got Liam Kennedy with us on the programme. You mentioned there the social media. What's the best way for people to sort of check out what you're doing on social media?
Facebook, just Liam Kennedy. Instagram is mental_health_warrior_87. And me Twitter page is @LiamLisa88.
And what we'll do is we'll make sure we get all the links up on our social media as well, so people can follow them as well. Liam's brought one of the poems in as well, so he's going to give us some of his poetry as well. What a story that was, by the way, about the guy who contacted you about the funeral. I mean, I got a little chill as you told us that. We're going to have some of the poetry live in the studio next here on Radio City Talk.
Mental Health Monday with Mick Coyle
on Radio City Talk.
We've got Liam Kennedy in the studio on this week's programme. He's lived with various different issues when it comes to his own mental health, and he's fighting through the other side. Describes himself now as being in recovery. He's now a motivational speaker and, against all odds, has become a poet in that time as well. He's been putting his poetry out there. People have been receiving it in many, many different ways. And I'm very pleased to say he's... well, you're going to recite two poems on the programme today.
Two poems, yeah.
So, you know, what one's off the top of your head.
Yeah, and one's...
And one you've written down.
Yeah, yeah.
So are these like classics? Are these like the your go-to ones? Are these the most popular ones you're going to do?
Yeah, this one is, it's called Make or Break, and it depicts the 10-week breakdown one I've just talked about. And the other one is called My Fuse Is Lit. It's a little bit like a rap. I got inspiration from Eminem, but it's not as...
I checked with producer. Are we allowed to rap on the station yet? We're rapping? Yeah, not me. Yeah, we're rapping. That's fine. So you're going to do one, and then you're going to end with one. So which one do you want to do first?
Make or Break.
Make or Break. Let's hear it.
Okay. This story of which I'm about to tell is from a time when I spent 10 weeks in hell. My meds were stopped and I could not sleep. It really didn't matter if I counted sheep. I was trapped in my room and out of sorts. My brain was struggling to process thoughts. If this was a race, then I was behind. I was starting to go out of my mind. In my room, day after day, I was so desperate I started to pray. I was locked away and became a recluse. My illness was killing me with mental abuse. Sleep deprivation was taking its toll. My mind could not function through lack of control. Into week 9 and drifting away. There were no bright colours, it was all dull and grey. Week 10 and the most important day of my life. I'd awoken with scars of war and strife. Freedom at last, I was weak but alive. 10 weeks of hell, but I managed to survive. A second chance at life I just had to take. The last day of the breakdown really was make or break. A year has passed and I'm chasing glory. I've opportunities galore and I'm telling my story. I'm positive, I'm dedicated, there will be no let up. My three keywords in life are never give up.
Hey, there we go. Liam Kennedy on Mental Health Monday, sharing his story and also sharing his poetry as well. There'll be a lot of people, Liam, who listen to the programme who are in that difficult time themselves, who are experiencing that. You talked about, you know, the Shawshank moment when you come out the other side. There will be some people who think, I'm never going to feel like that. People will think that moment isn't coming their way, but it's not going to come. But for so many people, when they do speak out, when they do share those stories, where they do go looking for help, get the right medication or whatever it is, we'll find those moments. How do you go about when you're motivating people and when people are looking to sort of get inspiration from your story, enable them to see that when their mind is saying it's not working for you?
It's convincing them. It's about showing yourself as a prime example that it can be done. You know, it's not as easy as saying you're going to come out of this. It's a work in progress. And I like to use my own story as the catalyst behind people seeing it and taking inspiration from it for themselves. And, you know, I always, the key word I always use is belief. You've got to believe, even if it doesn't look good. If you create belief, you give yourself a chance and you're planting seeds. You've got to believe, but... It's easier said than done. But the more I put myself out there and the more I speak on certain things like this, social media, poetry nights, you know, I can inspire people. You know, I can show people that it can be done.
Just tell us about the reaction you've had to your poetry. You mentioned the social media reaction as well, but that you've been invited to take part in things as well and to publish some of your poetry too.
Yeah, yeah. Well, I've actually... My book's due to be released in September. It's going to be called From Tears to Glory, and it's just a poetry book, but each piece is inspirational. You know, it offers hope, it offers fight, it offers strength. And I can't wait for it to be out there, because at the moment I'm just sort of restricted to social media. But with my book being out there, I can expand my audience. It's not about financial gain. It's about being able to reach another echelon, you know, another type of audience, you know, who haven't had the pleasure to see it at the time.
And for those people who you're sort of networking with now, those people who are meeting you for the first time, what are they saying about you and your experience? Are they saying you're offering maybe something that they've not got elsewhere, things that don't come from a textbook wherever they'd be getting their information?
They're saying, I mean, I know this is a bit mad to say, but there's people getting in touch with me saying I'm giving them more inspiration than their own doctors. I know I'm not a doctor, but I'm someone who's lived it, who is living it. And, you know, it's again, I don't look at that and think, oh, I'm great. I just think, wow, you know, I'm having an impact on people. I am actually helping people. It's not just me thinking it. I'm getting the reaction from my peers, you know, my fellow mental health brothers and sisters around the world.
But that's a tremendous thing to be proud of, isn't it? That actually you've lived through those problems, but actually you might be part of the solution to other people who are going through that. You know, and they may find that medication, doctors, sports as therapy, football, you know, or weightlifting, whatever it is, but actually the thing that might just nudge them a little bit further down the road might be one of your poems, might be hearing your story being told as well. And that's about those mental health brothers and sisters, that mental health community, putting its arm around everybody and being there for everybody. And you've been part of that too.
It's an honour. It really is. I didn't think that before I come out of the breakdown. I didn't think that this was going to be my future. I really didn't. But it's all made sense to me now. Like, I just truly believe I was meant to be tested. I was meant to come out of it a much stronger man. And now I'm meant to help people. Like I said, 50% of the work's done. I've got myself back on track. The other 50% is now going out there and helping others, helping them, you know, create their own story. And then I just want to pass on the good work. And then it's like a positive infection or a knock-on effect, they can go on and inspire others then, and it just spreads. That's like the mission that I'm on.
Can I ask you now, in terms of your own mental health now, you mentioned there, you know, voices that you'd heard, you were down to two. So in terms of yourself, if you were just stood on your own and you were assessing your own mental health, how would you describe yourself at this moment?
I'm having a good day today. I mean, I still get me down days, but I have things in place. I lift weights, I write a poem. Writing a poem's a big one, because it's like transferring my emotions onto a page. And when I do it, it's like a relief, and I feel better for it. And then I'll share it on social media, and then I'll get the feedback. You know, what started off as a bad day has been turned into a good one, just simply by writing a poem. And then hopefully helping others who would just happen to read it.
Yeah.
I mean, I'm having a really good day today. I just play it day by day. I don't think... I have goals, but I don't think too far ahead in terms of mental health.
Sure, because actually, I think people will hear you and think you've spoken so positively about yourself and now the experience that you live in at the moment. But also, it's worth bearing in mind that actually, you know, it is an ongoing sort of trial for yourself.
Yeah, yeah.
As well, that it's not, you know, a golden ticket and everybody's sort of... you know, happy and dancing around, that actually it's about managing and it's about finding that way. And actually that appears to be something you really seem to be doing really well.
Yeah, absolutely. I just think it's important to not think too far ahead. Just play it day by day. Just, you know, make sure you come out. When you're going to sleep, just feel satisfied what you've done throughout the day. If you've worked hard, I always say today prepares you for tomorrow. What you've done today will set you up nice for tomorrow. That's how I see it.
Hey, I'll tell you what, you've been great with us today, so you're going to be even better tomorrow. I'm certain of it as well. You've got you're organising your own poetry.
Yeah.
Mental health poetry night.
Mental health poetry night on the 8th of September at the Brink.
So is that going to be something where it's going to be like a Liam Kennedy gig, or are you going to invite other people
it's not just me. I'm going to host it and I'll read a few out myself, but I want others to come out and show some courage and bravery to speak on stage and talk, you know, read out the poems and stuff.
Absolutely. Have you got names or do you need people to come forward and contact you?
I want people to come forward and contact me. I haven't really got... you just mentioned Colin Dolan. He's going to speak. He's a good friend of mine, Colin. But I haven't got anyone else to talk. So I'm going to, like, hopefully get people to attend and you know, read some poems out.
Absolutely. Well, what a brilliant format you've got now to be able to sort of put that out there as well. So if you're listening to Liam speak and you're thinking, actually, I start writing, you know, poetry or maybe short stories, that kind of thing, and you want to get involved in this one, if you want to contact us here at the station, or as I say, we'll get Liam's social media details up as part of the social media stuff through at Radio City Talk, and you can find links to him and get involved in that. But if you want to just email me, mick@radiocity.co.uk. If you want to even send some of the stuff that you've been writing across, I'll forward it on to Liam.
Yeah, that'd be great.
I'm sure you've got a keen eye for poetry now. Maybe you'll be thinking, as long as make sure I'm the best one. make sure that my stuff's up there.
No,
headline act. But do send that in, and we'd be more than happy to pass that on to Liam as well. 8th of September at the Brink in town, a mental health poetry night. Is that the first ever mental health poetry night being hosted in Liverpool?
Possibly is, yeah.
It might be groundbreaking.
There's been poetry nights. I'm not sure I've seen a mental health poetry night, though.
Well, they always do brilliant stuff down at the Brink as well, so we'll point people in the direction of that as well. And you're working with a publisher as well, so you've got it all going on, Liam. It seems like 2018, what's left of it, another 6 months or so.
Yeah.
Might be an interesting few months for
you. Yeah, it is.
We'll speak again, I'm sure, before the 8th of September. You've got another poem, though.
Yeah.
We're going to wrap up with this one. What's this one called?
My Fuse Is Lit.
And is this one which, you know, we talked about the 10 weeks there. Is this the one which looks to the future? Is this the one that motivates and, looks outward?
This is the true Liam. This is the fighter.
Let's hear it. Liam Kennedy's with us on Mental Health Monday.
Okay, my fuse is lit. My fuse is lit. There is one thing I'll admit. My life can be so hard at times, but I refuse to quit. For the rest of my life now, this is something that I will commit. I know for a fact I will never submit. I need positive thoughts to keep me mentally fit. The more people I meet, the more energy I can transmit. I'm full of energy, longevity and positivity, empathy, and I'm also super strong mentally. I have a recipe of life that is acting as the remedy. I will still be helping people even when I'm 70. I really want to give people back their identity from my peers. I believe there's a level of expectancy. You all inspire me. I want to leave a lasting legacy. Remember the name, and that name is Liam Kennedy.
Hey, there you go. That was absolutely spot on. The mental health warrior, Liam Kennedy. Liam, if people want to contact you again, just mention your social media, different types of social media that you're available on and how they can contact you.
Okay, my Facebook is just Liam Kennedy. My Instagram is mental_health_warrior_87. And if you want to contact me on Twitter, I'm at LiamLisa88.
Brilliant stuff. Thank you for your time today, Liam.
Thanks
really
for having
appreciate
me.
You
Thank
joining
you.
Us. Brilliant story. Incredible story. Thank you for being so open and honest with sharing that story as well. And thanks for joining us on
Thank
Mental
you.
Health
it's been
Monday.
A pleasure. Thank you.
Mental Health Monday. If you want to get involved in the programme, you can do. Drop me an email, mick@radiocity.co.uk. That's mick@radiocity.co.uk. Now, podcast listeners are about to get a bonus interview with Omid Jalili. It's Men's Health Week this week. Of course, it's all about physical health, but of course, it's about mental health too.
Mental Health Monday with Mick Coyle.
Radio City Talk.
Okay, so it's Radio City Talk. I am very pleased to say, joining us on the programme now, we have the comedian and actor, although if you check his IMDb, he's done a million one other things as well, Omid Jalili. Omid, thank you for your time.
Great to be here, Mick.
Really appreciate you coming on the programme today. Now, Omid, do you mind if I ask you how old you are?
52.
52 years of age. The reason I'm asking, this new survey out, I know you've been taking a look at it, about how men perceive themselves both physically and mentally and the sort of peaks and troughs that men go through throughout the course of their lives. So according to this survey, you're just coming through this sort of like a renaissance period where physically and mentally you're starting to get to grips with how you are. And apparently now you're on an upward trend through your 50s and 60s. That make you feel better.
It does. And how appropriate that we're talking about people losing interest in their appearance and general health to have someone like me on your show. It makes absolute sense. And because I'm a man, I lost interest in my personal appearance the minute I stopped breastfeeding. that's what happens. But I was very interested to read that especially around the whole country, I think there's the same in the Northwest area, that 10% of men regain their interest in their appearance and general health in their around between 50 and 60. But basically at age 42, men lose their interest in their appearance and general health. And it's interesting to me because do you remember there was a program called 7 Up where they followed some kids age 7, then they came back when they were 14 and they were 21. It was every 7 years they did this. And it's interesting, footballers in multiples of 7, so their peak is between 21 and 28, but they're still very good between 28 and 35. But it's really, they usually retire around 35 because that's the body clock changes. And then the next jump is 35 to 42. And it was when I was 42 exactly, I remember very specifically watching X Factor with my wife, and they had a guest appearance by Robbie Williams. And usually when you sat on the sofa, I looked at her, she was fixed on Robbie Williams, and I looked at her and she never looked back at me. I just said to her, "Do you fancy Robbie Williams?" And she went, "No," quite pointedly, "I only fancy bald, fat, hairy men." And I thought, all right, she's talking about me. And that was her way. And she's not a very judgmental person at all. Wives usually are very kind about the way their husbands look. But that was the first time I noticed she was annoyed with me having, not so much given up, but being affected by having kids, prioritizing work, losing sleep, stopping exercise, eating what I wanted as a comedian. When you punish yourself, you've done a bad gig, you have a burger. Oh, but you've done a great gig, I'll have a burger. You know, and I think that was the first time, age 42, I sensed things were different. I think I sensed that my body had changed. And it's all about getting conscious. Once you're conscious of that, then you can start making changes. Then I started drinking water a bit more, hydrating, exercising again. So I think what this survey does, by giving people knowledge is power, and once you have that power, then you can choose if you want to do something about it. So I think this is Men's Health Week, so it's a good thing. It's a very good thing to get out there that men should be taking care of themselves, because at the end of the day, life is good and you want to enjoy it, being physically well, and then that's also conducive to mental health, which is something you guys do very well to talk about on your radio station.
And it's interesting that you make the point there that, you know, that 35 to 42, such a busy time in people's lives, you know, young families, work commitments maybe at their peak, the travel that comes with work, they're the sort of times that you've got to be on the road maybe, particularly if they do a job like yourself. And actually, I wonder if now we're in a point where you can't look at physical appearance without thinking of mental well-being, the two are linked, that actually during that time your mental state maybe is not one which makes your physical appearance a priority. And I maybe wonder whether or not that's something which can be a little pointer for both men and women, partners, wives, husbands as well, to keep an eye around those age groups about that person, to think, well, they're starting to let themselves go, maybe there's something else going on, and actually a conversation at that point might say, well, yeah, well, actually I don't have time to do anything for myself. I don't have time to cook for myself. I don't have time to go to the gym because I'm constantly on this treadmill. The rat race is in full flow at that time.
Mick, you're so right. I remember, you know, I'm married to a Scouser, and they came to her family come and see me do a show in Liverpool. And I was feeling very tired. I wasn't that funny that night. I just was mentally, I think I repeated a joke. I did a joke and I didn't realize I repeated it half an hour later. My mind had gone. And that's when they started making jokes about this. They said, "Omid," I think my father-in-law said, "you know, Omid, his funniness is legendary. And by legendary, I mean it's a myth. It's a bit like the Loch Ness Monster. Everybody's heard of it, but nobody's seen it." And he was absolutely right, because I was terrible that night. And I think it was because I was feeling, I wasn't sick. I was generally unwell. And it had a knock-on effect on my ability to deliver. It's not just stand-up comedy. It's not just jokes. Anyone can tell a joke, but stand-up comedy is a very sophisticated mental exercise of getting thoughts and ideas and philosophies into humorous bits and sound bites. And it takes a tremendous amount of mental well-being and clarity to do that, and I was beginning to lose it. And that was when I was about 38, 39.
So. How do you get that back? You know, when you've got the tour schedule is there and you've booked Brighton one night and the next night you book Sunderland and then you booked Plymouth the night after that one, and you know there's no let-up. And actually, as much as, you know, you'll have fans who want to come and laugh, you know, if the first few jokes don't hit, then straight away the room changes and people go away disappointed or telling their friends that, God, he's not as funny as he was when he was on the TV.
You're completely right. And I think that the first thing I did was sleep. I think sleep, you know, when they say in business deals, we say, oh, let's sleep on it. You should sleep on it, because it's only through sleep. You can think something is a fantastic idea at 4 o'clock and you think, great. And then they say sleep on it. Then you'll sleep on it. And then with clarity in the morning, when you've had a bit of coffee and you feel awake, you think, actually, no, that wasn't a great idea. And sleep is when the body repairs itself. So when you've lost a lot of sleep, it can really affect your mind. So that's the first thing I did. Drinking water as well is very important because, you know, the brain has synapses where you send an electronic message through fluid, and the more hydrated we are, the better you function. So that's the first thing I did. Better sleep and drinking more water had a tremendous effect on my physical health and my mental health. So, but these are things, unfortunately, I understood quite late in life. Had I told my younger self when I was 16 or 17, just to cut some sweets and don't drink Coke all the time, drink some water, drink a few liters of water every day. If I told my younger self that, I think I'd probably look better and I'd feel better now. But I do, it's never too late, because they say the body is meant to live about 120 years. So actually, in your 50s and 60s, you're kind of at the halfway point, really, technically. So it's never too late. So I can see why people realize life is good. You can be happy, and a lot of happiness comes from physical and mental and spiritual well-being. So it makes sense to me that people can start going to the gym when they're 50 and 60. It's never too late.
One of the findings of the survey as well talks about, you know, children are a priority, of course they become. Work is a priority, career is a priority, personal appearance as well, and some even simply wanting to impress their mum. I wonder whether or not that actually, as you get older, you get a little bit smarter about your own ability to work maybe your physical and mental health into your work. So actually, you know, you can have mental health and well-being exercises and things like that you can do. You can integrate the water, as you talked about, as part of the busy lifestyle. No one's going to say you can't see your kids today because you sat at home drinking, you know, 4 litres of water. And actually, maybe as we get older, maybe it's past the age of 42, that's the point where we're smart enough to realise we can do all those things and we can get involved in those things as an ongoing thing, not as an exclusive thing.
No, you're absolutely right. And I think that at the end of the day, it's also about how you present yourself. I know there was a guy quite a few years ago, and I think it's interesting. God, now I didn't realize he was in his early 40s. I don't remember the exact age, but he was trying to get me signed up for something. And every time he came to the house, he'd say, hello. I said, oh, hi. And before I'd offer him like tea or coffee, he goes, oh, can I just use your bathroom? I said, fine. And he'd be in there for 20 minutes, obviously doing a number two, obviously. And I didn't mind the first time. Then it did happen the second time. And this chap was slightly overweight and he looked unhealthy. And I think also he may have lost his mind, because when you're doing a business deal, you don't want the first thing to say, excuse me, can I go for a number two in your house? And it was just that kind of lack of awareness that's not the best way to start. In the end, what he was offering was quite good. But I actually thought, do I want to be in business with this guy? Do I really want a guy who's going to come to my house and go to the toilet for half an hour every time he came around? So it became a funny thing that we said, no, thank you. And he said, but this is a no-brainer. And it kind of was a good thing. But I just put off by him. And I think that's what we realize. A lot of business deals, a lot of things in life are presentation. Mm-hmm. And how we present ourselves is also, you wouldn't think it, but is remarkably important. So how you dress, how you look, even, you know, oh, I liked him, but could you smell his breath? Oh, yes. And, you know, bad breath is a sign of vengeful thoughts. You know, it gives you an idea. If someone has a physical problem, it's always because of something else. You know, so it's important to realize that first impressions and being in life and presenting yourself as someone who's not a loony dingbat nutbag is actually very, very important. And people, unfortunately, we become conscious of that sometimes too late. I know I only became conscious of all these things when I'm in my late 40s, but it's never too late. I think that's the problem. That's why these surveys go out, and while we're talking right now, is to try and raise the general physical and mental health of the whole population.
The other thing as well, I mean, you're 53 years of age. I don't know if
52.
You've...
52! Don't say 53!
Oh, 52. I don't know if you've looked at pictures of your parents or grandparents at that age.
Yes.
There is this thing where I think if you look now, my own parents at their 40th birthday, I think they probably look older at their 40th than they actually look now that they're sort of into their mid-60s. And I wonder whether or not actually that's one of the things that's happened over the last 20, 25 years, is the generation has kicked on a bit. That the 40th, life begins at 40. A lot of people are now thinking, well, really, those sort of rules don't really kick in until you're about 60.
yes. years of age. You know, people think, oh, 40 now, I need to start doing something with my life because maybe your kids had left home by then. Now, you're not having kids until your mid-30s, and now people are seeing 60 as the next time to sort of... What I'm saying is you've got 8 years.
I've got 8 years before I'm finished. But I have seen some people, I'm a comedian, I travel around and I see lots of old friends, and usually a lot of people like me have changed. Most of the guys have got bellies, and all the women have got a bit of few wrinkles and white hairs, and that's to be normal. But there was one woman who I knew from long, long time ago who looked absolutely, absolutely better than she'd ever looked. And she was like 49, 50. And I said to her, what's your secret? And she said, being mentally aware of what I eat, but doggedly telling myself, I'm still a young person. I'm not going to let myself go. I'm going to remain young in heart and young in body. And she looked beautiful, really, really beautiful. And I was very happy for her and very happy for her husband and very happy for her kids, because the kids were saying, yeah, we're very proud of mum. You know, her kids were like 20, 21, 22. And it wasn't like as if she was a mother who'd let herself go. She was still trim, still fit, and wasn't in the gym every day, but just had mentally told herself, I'm not going to let go. And I think that if we look, you made the point about looking back at pictures of your parents. I think my dad always looked 70 from the age 35. So I think there was no awareness about mental health, no awareness about physical health. You just kind of give up, you know, and that's what people do. But I think now it's time, people are enjoying life and they're telling themselves, I'm still young. And actually, as you get older, I feel like I'm an 18-year-old. I feel like I'm 19 or something. But it's up to me now to keep that strong and to do something about it, you know. And I think it's very important that message goes out.
Amit, thank you for your time today. Sounds like you go back in Liverpool for the family reasons, plenty of time. But are you planning any more tours coming back?
Yes, I'm doing the York Comedy Festival on the 19th of July. I'll be at the Marlowe Theatre in Canterbury on the 28th. I'll be in Walsall, I think, October 3rd. If you go on my website, omidjalili.net, and there's some dates there.
Omid, thank you for your time. Really appreciate you joining us on the programme.
Cheers, mate.
Mental Health Monday on Radio City Talk with Mick Coyle.
Radio City Talk.